I will be reading Luke 10, 38 through 42. Now as they went on their way, he entered a certain village, where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." Here ends the reading.
Here we are, right in the middle of the dog days of summer. What are the dog days anyway? Where did we come up with that phrase? What's that supposed to mean? You know? But it's kind of just ingrained in the culture around us. And these days of summer, these dog days, invoke many images in our minds. Our American culture has icons of summer, like hot dogs and fireworks on the 4th of July, flip-flops, walking on the beach, taking a nap in a hammock under the shade of a tree. You know, the hammock is an interesting device. I wonder who first came up with the idea of a delicately balanced sling of fabric as a restful place to recline. Any images I can recall of them are usually from movies or TV shows, and it ends up being a very physical slapstick comedy routine where someone tries a slow approach, gets into the hammock and lays back, only to have it dump them over on the ground. Or in extreme cases, they go round and round and round and get twisted up in the fabric and are trapped inside the hammock. Now, I've only tried to get into one once or twice myself, and I found I had to work so hard that it wasn't restful or relaxing at all. I think the trick is to get into the middle of it and be still. And of course, being still isn't easy for me, even when I'm asleep, let alone when I'm awake. I think that summer's day hammock is an excellent metaphor for how we live our lives today. Our lives tend to be so very rushed. We get tangled up in the busyness of our daily routines that we feel like a person trying to take a nap in that hammock, and we can't do it because we don't really know how to be still. I can't speak for you, but there are many days when I feel like I'm tangled up in the strings and the fabric of life and its expectations, and my personal sense of centeredness and well-being is hanging quite precariously in the balance. We live in an age of constant motion, going here, making this practice, that meeting, eating something in the car on the way. We are overdriven, hyper-scheduled, and afraid of the deafening noise. Not of cell phones. We are afraid of the deafening noise of silence. Why do you think iPods and other portable music players are so popular? We can't stand silence. We are unable or unwilling to just be. You know, there's wonderful word evidence that has crept into our common vocabulary that points out this truth. When I was working on my doctorate at Drew University, one of my professors, Dr. Leonard Sweet, spoke of his family life as being bicoastal. And the weird thing was, I knew exactly what he meant. He didn't have to explain it at all. He works in New Jersey, and he lives with his family in the coastal area of Washington State. Or at least they used to then. I don't know if they do now. When he told me that, all I could think of was how exhausting and disjointed life must be for them. And the funny thing is, they probably didn't even realize it. And here's another word for you that points to that same truth. Multitask. There probably aren't more than 10 people in this room right now who don't know what that means or couldn't use it in a sentence. But did any of us use this word 20 years ago? I don't remember it. But it bespeaks of our culture today. You can't be still. It's not even good enough to be doing one thing at a time. You've got to be doing two or three things at once to feel productive and worthwhile. And so it is with this collective cultural experience that we come rushing in for a short time with God. Let's get things done in and out in an hour, if you please. We've got important things to do today. The Cowboys kick off at 12. I know it's not fall, but I hear that a lot. You know, it kind of parallels some of the tension found in our gospel passage this morning. It's not hard for us to identify with Martha's perfectionism and drive for approval. Gotta get that meal on the table while it's hot. Go, go, go! Have you ever looked at a colony of ants in their daily routine? Now, I'm not talking about the mean Texas fire ants that swarm you and then bite all at once. I'm talking about ordinary ants, the kind that live and work together, marching in a little line, carrying things back to the mound, going back out for the next assignment, whatever that is. They are in a constant state of motion, without pausing to reflect on their meaning, their purpose, their worth to the colony or themselves. I wonder if sometimes God looks down and thinks that's what we look like too. Problem is, we're not ants. God has made us in God's image. We have a need for relationship. We have a need and the ability to make meaning with something outside ourselves. We need belonging and love and purpose, just as we need food, clothing, and shelter. We need physical and spiritual enrichment. Otherwise, we run out of steam. Have you ever seen a person or a family when they arrive at this point? It's frequently a painful and scary place to be. Not sure anymore of why we're here. Our purpose and value, they seem lost or hidden from us. We're numb and bone dry. I think we aren't that great at meeting our physical needs. If we did a better job of this, we wouldn't be facing the multiple medical crises in our country that stem from obesity and from the toxins that we regularly expose ourselves to willfully. But at least we are a little bit better at that than we are at recognizing and taking time for our spiritual needs. We know we have to have food and water or we'll die. But we can go without, or at least we think we can go without, spiritual care and nurture. Yes, we identify with Martha all too well. Martha thought Mary was rude and inconsiderate for not being in the kitchen helping her fix the meal. Her sister was one of those contemplative types, you know, that went to prayer groups and spent time in meditation, while Martha helped to run the local soup kitchen and stock the shelves of the children's clothes closet every other Tuesday. But Mary understood the need to be fed in mind, heart, and spirit. Jesus blesses her for this and gently scolds Martha for ignoring her own needs and trying to deny her sister the spiritual enrichment she sought. But if you notice, Jesus doesn't deny that people have physical needs or that Martha has it all wrong in how she spends her time. He does remind her, however, that her service was never a precondition for his acceptance or love. She did not have to win his approval. And here he was, Son of God, in her home. And she was too busy trying to be the excellent host with the perfect meal, the perfect house, and the perfect table that she had no time to sit and spend with her guest. And how often are we so busy going and doing, sometimes doing good, but going and doing, that we don't have any time to spend with Jesus? Psychologist and author Eric Fromm speaks of our busyness this way. He writes, "Most people are so active that they cannot stand doing nothing. They even transform their so-called leisure time into another form of activity. If you're not active making money, you're active driving around, playing golf, or just chatting about nothing. What is really dreaded is the moment in which you have nothing to do." Jesus comes into this frenetic and junky environment saying, "Sit for a moment here at my feet and find for yourself that which truly matters." Life goes by so quickly. That's why I like to go camping. For just a little while, I'm in a place where I have no schedule, no to-do list, no chores, no agenda, or appointments. We can eat when we want to eat, go for a walk or not, go to bed when we're tired, get up to the sounds of birds singing instead of the alarm clock, or just roll over and listen to them as you drift back to sleep. And if you want to just sit in the dark of the night under a blanket of stars and stare at a roaring campfire for an hour at a time and say nothing at all, then you can do just that. We know how to do, but we need to learn how to be, and then how to balance our being and doing, our serving and sitting, our listening and giving. Sometimes achieving a balance requires a shift back and forth on the scales, occasionally in dramatic fashion, until evenness and health is achieved. I think this is a place towards which we all journey, that balance between being and doing, between being in the world and being with God. We need to learn how to not be in a hurry. Charles Swindoll tells a story from his own life as an author and church leader that well illustrates our truth. He was overcommitted, choking down food in a hurry at mealtime, snapping at his family, feeling irritated by any unexpected interruption. One evening, his little daughter, Colleen, wanted to tell him something important that had happened at school that day. She began her story by saying, "Daddy, I want to tell you something, and I'll tell you really fast." Realizing what was happening, he stopped, looked at his daughter, and said, "Honey, you can tell me, and you don't have to tell me really fast. Say it slowly." To which his daughter replied, "Then listen slowly." Do you know how to listen slowly? How many times have I hurried my own child along in a story he was trying to tell because I had important things to do? We are a busy people, overextended, rushing here and there, all in an attempt to get it all done, squeeze it all in, all the while keeping the pieces together. Yet we are perennially frustrated that the pieces keep coming apart. How can we listen to Christ? We cannot sit at his feet as Mary did. He is not physically present with us as he was with her, but he does speak. He speaks to us through the scriptures, if we read them. He speaks to us through prayer, if we pray. He speaks to us through worship, if we worship. He speaks to us through our Christian friends and church family, if we spend time with them. He speaks to us in the silent moments of our lives, if we are open to the stillness and to hearing him. The word disciple means student, or one who learns. To learn from Jesus, we have to take time to listen to him. We must allow ourselves the time to let his words seep into the depths of our being, into our very souls. The good news is that the sky is not going to fall if we stop and take time to become disciples of Jesus, learners of our Lord, listeners of Jesus. Instead, what we find is that when we allow the stillness to wash over us, the silence to quiet our minds and our souls, connect with Christ, we come away refreshed, renewed, ready to face and recognize what is the tyranny of the urgent and what is truly important. We are able to be and do, to listen and serve in a way where we receive and share the grace and the glory of God.